everyone, this is Bev Marshall here, and I've had the honor and privilege of being married to Drew Marshall for almost 20 years. 12 of the best years of my life. Have you ever noticed just how sensitive of a man he is?
I was crying with him when he was crying because...
Hold on. We were crying. We're men here.
He may not know how to fix stuff around the house, but at least he knows women's fashion.
Is it the way women are dressing? I mean, I know I'm going to be labeled sexist by even suggesting this. You know, we can wear whatever we want. Well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of skimpy-looking stuff out there.
I know he thinks he's Dr. Phil and genuinely seems like he understands us women.
Women seem to be driven more by emotions than men do, and men tend to be a little bit more analytical. And I'm not a sexist jerk, so don't write me emails saying I hate women or something like that.
But don't worry, ladies. I've trained him well.
Driving, turning your radio down, and talking on the phone. You must be a woman, because a guy couldn't do all that.
So if you're looking for sound professional guidance, well, there's always the guests he interviews. Tune in Saturdays between 1 and 5 for The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talk program.
Here's a little song by Sean King. I wonder if this is Larry singing with her. Have a listen.
Your lips say come and kiss me, and they haven't made a sound. Your hips say come on with me, when you just walking round. We got a big
well, legendary radio personality and host of CNN's Larry King Live takes the stage with special guest Sean King live at Falls View Casino and Resort March 26th and 27th at 9 p.m., folks. For over 50 years, Larry has interviewed many spiritual leaders, gets a lot of God people on there. And one of his favorite questions he likes to ask is, if I don't believe in Jesus, will I go to hell? I got to say, one of the best answers I ever heard, Tim, for that question was the last time Dr. Graham was on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, Dr. Graham, yes. to I would say Dr. King, be the wrong Dr. King, he said, Larry, all I can tell you is that without Jesus, there's no guarantee. And I thought that was one of the best answers I've ever heard.
Yeah.
He likes to also ask, with what just happened in Haiti, for example, doesn't that shake your faith? I mean, how could you believe in a God who allows such horrible natural disasters to happen? Well, today we're going to find out a little bit about what Larry believes and why he gets so many God guests on his show.
Oh, Drew, how are you? First, yes. That was not me singing Hunk of Love. Sean sang Hunk of Love. That was her. And when they see her next week at the Falls View, they'll really appreciate. She's a terrific talent.
She is.
And then what I do is I come on and I just tell funny stories. Hopefully they're funny. Well, I think people will laugh. We'll have a good time. It'll be a great couple of nights. I hope you can come over, Drew.
I would love to come over. I've been told by more than enough people in the biz that I need to see the show because apparently you are a master storyteller.
Well, I've been doing it all my life, and I make people laugh. I try to make. Actually, you want to know something? Yeah. I get more kick out of doing this. I did it in Vegas. I do it at a lot of conventions. In fact, I'm at a convention, a Twitter convention, Monday in Las Vegas. I get more kick out of doing this than doing my show.
Really?
Because there's nothing like making people laugh. There's a control factor to it. There's a feeling you have when you're standing on a stage. First, it's all up to you. You don't have a guest that can help you. You know, you can't bail out and take phone calls.
No.
All right, so I'm there. I have to be funny. I love that. And then I love that moment when you know you're coming to a punchline or telling a story, and you can get them to laugh, and then they laugh. It's like a love affair. And every comedian, I think if I didn't do what I do, I would have been a stand-up.
Are you funny, though, Larry?
I'm funny. Oh, yeah, I'm funny. If I wasn't funny... You got to be funny to be in this business, Drew.
Yes, sir.
How do you exist?
Wow. That's a good question.
Aha. As to the God questions, we do a lot of that because about 75% of America considers itself religious. So we always get very good audiences. I haven't had, of course, Billy has been under the weather for a while now. Billy's one of my favorite people. I consider myself a personal friend of his. In fact, the day I married Sean, the night before, I had to do angioplasty, and Billy was coming to the wedding. So that's how close I am to Billy, even though I'm an agnostic and Billy is a believer. I respect him. I appreciate him. I thought that was a pretty good answer, although I don't buy the guarantee part. but it was a very good answer.
You know, Dr. Graham says he watches your show.
Yeah, every night.
Every night.
We hear from him. Now, lately I've spoken to Frank a lot. You know, his father is in ill health. He hasn't been the same since the wife died.
Yeah.
Because they were an incredible couple.
His publicist for the last number of decades, Larry Ross, just told me last night that Dr. Graham can't read the paper like he used to, so your show is a lifeline.
Yeah, I know. I have a great affection for Billy. I started interviewing him when I was in Miami years ago, and as you said, I've been doing this 53 years. You know, in fact, the CNN show, Drew, this is really interesting. To me it was when I learned it. On June 1st, we're going to be 25 years on CNN. That's the longest-running television show in television history, hosted by the same person at the same time on the same network.
Well done.
So I'm very proud of that. And I know Billy's been there for a lot of it. I have a great tie to him. It's a friendship tie. I don't share his beliefs.
No, yeah. But he's been on 23 times.
Yeah, 23 times. He's up to holding the record.
You seem to talk a lot about the subject of death with Dr. Graham. Why do you think that is?
Well, because my own gut belief is no death, no religion. And all religion seems based on it. Be good, you'll go somewhere. Be nice, things will be better for you. The meek shall inherit the earth. My theory is, this is just a theory, I have no basis in fact, because I don't know how it all began. I'm always amazed that people know how it all began.
Oh, me too.
I have no idea. But so my theory is that the human evolved. I agree with the theory of evolution. The human evolved. He's walking along one day with his friend. The friend falls down. He don't get up. He don't breathe. He starts to smell bad. They put him in the ground. Then another one. Whoa, what is this? This is it. There has to be something bigger. And smart people had to say, if you be good, you're going to go somewhere, like we'll make it heaven. So all faith, I think, began with, you know, like, if you believe, you will be serve eternity with someone. I respect that belief. I just can't make the leap. But death is the reason. For no death, why have faith?
Yeah. Well, you must have loved the Ricky Gervais movie, The Invention of Lying.
Yeah, I love that. I love Ricky. And I like, you know, Lenny Bruce was a great friend of mine. Yeah. Lenny used to have great questions. I asked Billy Graham a Lenny Bruce question once. And Billy gave it a lot of thought. And the question was, this is what Lenny asked, and he referred to Billy in his act. Billy Graham wears really nice suits, right?
Yes.
He looks good.
Yeah.
Someone who got a calling from God, that is, God called you to lead the flock, who has more than one suit, while someone has no clothes, is a cop-out.
Interesting.
And Billy's answer was that in the modern world, you have to have a suit, you have to look nice to project the message. That was his answer.
But based on Marshall McLuhan's comment about the message is the media, I mean, you would understand that.
I understand it, but it was still a good question, because it deals with values.
Yes.
And why does a message have to be sold? I guess you have to sell any message. But the whole thing fascinates me. Well, the older you get, the more death fascinates me.
Are you afraid of death?
You bet your ass. And anybody who tells you they aren't, I'm amazed at. Sure. Why? One, I'm intentionally curious. I want to be around. Who's going to win the World Series? Who's going to be the next president after Obama? I don't want to go.
Yeah.
And I want to see my kids grow up. You know, I got two little boys. One just turned 11. One's going to be 10. They both play, both very good in sports, really good baseball, football. They're very active.
How was the baseball game this morning, by the way?
It was an exhibition game. They lost, but Cannon played great.
Okay.
But they're real, they start, I love Red Bobby used to use a great term, when the season officially starts. Starts for Chance tomorrow and Cannon Monday. And Red used to say, well, the exhibition season is over. They are now playing in anger. I always remember that term from my childhood.
You know, I came across I was talking to someone who I thought was possibly the biggest Dodger fan, Sandy Brokaw. Do you know a publicist?
Oh, I know Sandy. I know his brother. I know his father.
Yeah. But I'm wondering, I think you might rival him for the biggest Dodgers fan in the world.
I would have said that true, but I had a time when I drifted because I grew up in Brooklyn. I worshiped the Dodgers. I left in 1957 to go down to Miami to break into radio. They left in 1957 to go to L.A., and we sort of parted company. I didn't regard them as deserting me because I had left, too. So now I'm in Miami. The Orioles trained in Miami. So I got to see young Cal Ripken and young Eddie Murray and all these young guys. So I saw them develop. Now I spent 20 years in Miami. We had no Major League Baseball. We had a farm team of the Phillies. So I rooted for the Orioles from afar, and Oriole baseball was carried in Miami because they trained there, so it was a local station carried them. Then I moved to Washington. The closest team to me was the Orioles. So I became a rabid Oriole fan. I was sitting with the owner of the Orioles when we won the 83 World Series. Earl Weaver became one of my best friends. I followed the Dodgers from afar. I read the box scores. I kept it. I rooted for them. I hope they win, but when the Orioles beat the Dodgers in that World Series in 66, four straight, I was an Oriole fan. However, now comes the moment. I move to L.A. I meet this young lady. I get married. I never thought I'd have children again. I have children. They want to be baseball fans. I take them to Dodger games, so now I'm back in. So I'm not as great as Sandy because there were years apart.
Yes.
But now I am a very big Dodger fan. I'm objective. But not that much.
Not that
I,
much.
Even I yell at umpires, and I feel bad about the divorce of the owners. And I'm very much involved. I try to go to spring training. I keep close.
Actually, Sandy was just heading into the funeral yesterday for Peter Graves. Another sad loss.
One of the great roles of all time. Peter Graves as the pilot in Airplane.
Yeah.
That will live forever among great comedy cameos.
Victor.
Victor, you like little clothes, boy?
We just talked about Catholic priests.
What do you make of that?
Listen, seriously, we went over it big time today, and in doing the research this week that I've done, I cannot let this issue go. I got to chomp on this a lot more.
No excuse. There's no rational. Now, celibacy has to have something to do with it. I mean, we'd be dark in our minds if we didn't think that you tell someone that is a natural urge of people, you can't do this and you're serving a higher purpose. That's awfully hard. You know, I remember I interviewed long ago a priest once who left the church to get married. And he was saying how he was delivering a sermon one day at Mass. And there was a lady in the third row. She was wearing a miniskirt. Her legs were folded. And he couldn't take his eyes off her. And he asked his bishop, what could he do with that urge? And the bishop said, have a glass of wine. But that didn't suffice. Now, why young boys? That beats me.
Yeah.
I've never had an explanation. There's no cure for it. I've never met anyone who's been cured. Maybe arrested for a while, but no, not cured.
Well, we revealed some shocking statistics today on this. And anyway, we won't.
What did you reveal?
We're hearing somewhere between 5 and 7% of these priests have abused children, and only 2% of them have been prosecuted.
Well, because the church covers it.
Yeah, and so that's...
That's not hard to understand. The parents don't learn about it till later.
Right.
If they do learn about it early, they're very devout in their church, so they still love their church. They love Christ. They're terribly torn with the actions of the priest. They take it to whom? To the bishop. Well, the bishop ain't going to report it because he's covering up for the church.
Yeah.
Very hard to get to.
Christopher Hitchens just wrote a brilliant article.
Oh, I love Chris.
That came out in the National Post up here, and he's basically saying, look, Ratzinger's got a lot to answer for, because not only did he shift a priest, an abusing pedophile priest, around instead of having him arrested back in his days as cardinal, he signed off on some doctrine and some policies that said, look, it's a bigger deal to report this than it is for this stuff to actually happen.
I didn't know he did that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was more of a sin to report it.
More of a sin to report it. You know, I mean, anyway.
Well, that's inexcusable. There's no rational explanation. There's no explanation.
But does that kind of stuff mess even further with your agnostic mind? Does that sort of solidify your resolve?
Well, it has nothing to do. It doesn't. It doesn't. In that, It has nothing to do with proof that there is or isn't a God,
right,
or a personal God looking down on you, because these are men. And so I don't blame a God for that, nor do I credit a God for the good works. I just don't know. But it's a shame upon the entire church, and the entire church should feel terrible about it. And action should be done, and police should be investigating more bishops and talking to people in churches. There should be massive investigations. I mean, nothing crueler can happen to a child than this.
I know William F. Buckley was one of your toughest guests to kind of, you know, get into the pocket.
Well, he was devout.
But, yeah, did you and he ever go toe-to-toe with the faith stuff?
Oh, faith, yeah, never on this, because this wasn't a big problem.
No, but on faith.
Yeah, and he said, now, the best thing said to me on faith wasn't said by Buckley. Buckley was very intellectual about it. Was Edward Bennett Williams, who I was the brightest man I ever knew. Brilliant lawyer, wonderful man, and a great friend. And he died of cancer. And when he was dying, we walked down Constitution Avenue together in Washington, a beautiful spring morning. And he knew he was dying, right? And he was an observant Catholic. And he said, it don't make sense unless we're going somewhere. This is all a joke.
Right.
Why don't we just eat strawberries, drink wine, and watch the dancers? Why go to work? Why do anything? Unless there's meaning to it. And if there's meaning to it, there has to be something after it. Well, I looked at it as a rationale, but I was an intellectual, a very good explanation of faith. What I don't have and have never been able to do, and I've been doing this since questioning rabbis when I was 10 years old, I can't make the leap. My wife is devout. Her family's devout. I'm not. I can't make the leap. I can't.
No.
I can't. Haiti was a classic to me. Haiti, if there is an omnipotent person or a being or
yeah.
spirit, that could have been prevented.
Right. Okay, but it's a strange set of circumstances that here we have this kid from the Bronx that grew up in a Jewish family who marries, eventually, a Mormon.
Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn.
What did I say?
Bronx. My
oh,
God.
Sorry.
You mentioned the home of the Yankees.
Sorry.
Are you out of your mind?
Sorry. Pardon me.
The luckiest team that ever walked the face of the earth.
I got the wrong...
Stripe the Bombers with all that money.
I got the wrong B word. I'm sorry.
Continue your premise.
I just find it ironic. Grew up with the Jewish heritage.
I am a social Jew. I love concepts of Judaism. I love the fact that they force me to question.
So you're Jewish?
I'm Jewish. Yeah, don't accept this just because we said it.
Yeah.
And you talk to Jews, they don't talk so much about just if there's an afterlife, good, but be good. Let the rest take care of itself.
You know, I've kind of hunkered down into Pascal's wager in the last 5 years. I used to be a pastor, Larry.
Really?
Yeah, don't hold that against me.
I don't. Why would I hold it against
you? Yeah.
Some of my best friends are.
Okay. Well, these days I hunker down into a bit of Pascal's wager, which, you know, the premise is basically live your life like there is a God, because if there isn't a God, you've lived a great life. But if there is a God and you live like there is no God, you're in trouble.
That's a great term. Now, many agnostics, many atheists would say that. Live your life as if there is a God. If there isn't, there isn't. You still lived a good life. If there is, you're on the right team. Lincoln once said, if there is a God, I hope he loves us.
Did he have that little Jewish inflection at the end?
Now, Jefferson was a deist.
Right.
I've read a lot about Jefferson. And deism makes some sense. There was a creator who then split. That's what deists believe. And so they accept the fact of a creator. They do good deeds, but they don't think there is somebody up there watching you.
Dr. Graham had one question that you posed that he couldn't answer. Well, you probably posed many that he couldn't answer, but this is one that stands out. How can you thank God for the sunshine when you don't blame him for the rain?
Yeah, he never answered that well.
Do you remember that scenario?
Thank God for the sunshine, but I don't blame him for the rain.
Yeah, because there was some crusade that he had in some country, and there was, like, monsoons. And he said it was the biggest turnout, and so, you know, we don't curse God because he bled, you know. And then you came out with that line, and he just kind of, I'm not real sure how to answer that.
a plane crashes. He's in a plane. It crashes. 53 die. He comes out with two broken arms. And miraculously is thrown from the plane, right?
Yeah.
And he says, thank God. Thank God for what? That you got two broken arms? That the other people died but you didn't?
Yeah, I'd be saying,
that's
why
perverse.
Me?
Yeah, why me, I might say. Holocaust, unexplainable, the Holocaust, unexplainable.
Of all your guests, Larry, whose passing has hit you the hardest?
Good question, Pastor. whose death? Well, my father's when I was 9 and a half.
Right.
The saddest moment was Bobby Thompson's homer. But that's not a death. Well, it was a death to me because I took a ticket to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge when there were too many people online. And I had to go to the bathroom. Or I'd have been gone.
Oh, boy.
Okay, let me think.
He's into his shtick, people.
Death that hit me hard. Franklin Roosevelt, I was 12, but he was like some sort of godfather to me. And all the people in my neighborhood worshipped him, as did all the Jews in the neighborhood in Brooklyn. So that hit me hard. Kennedy, because I'd just seen him a week before. And
what about Frank Sinatra?
Martin Luther King. Sinatra, because it didn't hit me hard because he was 84. Very friendly. He was very good to me. He was kind to me. He did his last interview with me.
Yeah.
But it didn't hit me hard. I knew he was sick.
Okay.
You know, I'm talking about, when you say hit your heart,
unexpected.
The first thing enters into me is also shock.
Yeah.
So when a person 85 who has heart disease dies, it doesn't shock. It doesn't hit me hard. So I would have to say Kennedy, because he was so young, so vibrant. King, you could say, was a surprise, but not a surprise. An outspoken black person walking the streets in Memphis. Is not a surprise. No, I'll give you an example. If God forbid something happened to Obama while speaking in Valdosta, Georgia, and I'm not going to put down Valdosta, Georgia, anywhere, it would be a shock, but not a shock, because his Secret Service is double the normal deployment. So somebody's fearing something. So I would say if I had to pick it all together, the fact I was in broadcasting, I had to do shows about it, it would be Kennedy.
Not to keep going on about Dr. Graham, because we're actually speaking to Larry King, so we should probably stay on that subject. But Dr. Graham said that...
I'm a doctor, too. I got 6 honorary degrees.
I knew that.
Yeah, I'm a doctor. But, refer to me as doctor.
Can I thank you, doctor? Doctor? Okay. This is like a bad scene from Fletch. Doctor? 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 Billy Graham said that one regret that he had was that he didn't make friends with younger people because now most of his friends, if not all, have passed.
Yeah. Well, Sinatra said... The saddest thing in his life, that all of his close friends are gone. You know, what do you do? See, like, I have some very close friends. We grew up together. In fact, one of them just turned 75 today. Had a party for him last night. I was 76 a couple months ago. If I had a wish, it would be that I go before my friends.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go. But I don't want to go. I don't want to go to one of their funerals.
You know, you're younger than Frank Gifford.
I was listening to the game when Gifford got hit by Bednarik.
Wow.
And I asked him, what do you remember about that? He said, Tuesday. You are going to remind people about next Friday and Saturday, right?
Yes, sir.
I hope so.
Yes, sir. Again
and
again.
I want you to come, Pastor.
Again and again. He's going to call me that from now on, isn't he? You have surrounded yourself with young people. You have married a young, lovely woman, as did Mr. Gifford. I think the age difference is very similar. There's
26 years.
Okay, well, there's 25 years between Frank and Kathy Lee. And I say, well done. Sean, wow, I had no idea she had the set of pipes that she has.
Oh, she's a hell of a singer. If I would say, she did a lot of acting. She raised a young boy, a marriage before me, who's now 28. He's with the Oakland Raiders, by the way. She gave up some things in her life. She should not have given up singing. She's, for 50 years old, she's fantastic. But she should have continued singing, in my opinion. By the way, she has a CD that's going to come out, and one of the cuts in there is a duet she did with Willie Nelson called I Give, a beautiful song. Willie Nelson's doing a big concert at Radio City Music Hall in July, and she's going to sing that song with him at that concert. She does have a wonderful voice. Her father manages her, and he's guided her through this. And wait, you see her on stage. She also is. She does her act well. In other words, you could be a great singer and not do your act well. She really is. It's a performance. I'm very proud of her. But yeah, it is. There's a difficulty to it. You know, like I look at my kids, and I mean, I'd love to be at Dodger Stadium one day when Chance takes the field, as he probably will. you know, but logically, I know I'm not going to be there. I mean, I'm logical, too.
How are you raising the boys? I mean, you come from this agnostic Jewish background. Your wife is Mormon. How are you raising the boys?
I let her raise them Mormon because since I didn't have the belief, I had no right to force that. But I keep reminding them that it's going to be their choice. And I'm taking them to a Seder.
A number of people in this last week have told me that you are this stupendous storyteller, and I would like you to give everyone a little sample of what they're going to get at Falls View Casino on March 26th and 7th, 9 p.m. Could you maybe share that story when you accidentally hit the president?
All right, I've just started as a disc jockey, and me and three friends, it's 1958, I've been on the air about a year. And we got this beat-up old convertible. I forget whose car it was, but I was driving. And we lived in Miami, and we decided we'd never seen Palm Beach. We're going to drive up to Palm Beach to see what Palm Beach is like. And we're driving up A1A, the coastal highway. On our left, beautiful homes. On our right, the Atlantic Ocean. It's a Sunday morning, about 10:30, nobody on the road. Crystal clear, beautiful morning. I'm looking up. I'm looking sideways. Look at that house. Look at the water. I'm looking up. Suddenly, I look ahead. I'm only doing about 10 miles an hour. It's a red light at Worth Avenue. It's a guy parked in a convertible, waiting for the light to change, and I hit him. Boom! I bang into him. You know, I feel a little depressed. I wasn't going that fast, but his head bounced. You know, comes out of the car, he comes back, and it's John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy. And he looks at me and says, "How? How could you hit me? It's a beautiful day. And no one on the road. How could you hit me?" So I said, "I'm sorry, Senator. I recognize him. I'm sorry." He said, I said, "Do you want to change licenses?" God, I wish we'd have done that.
Yeah.
He said, "No, but all of you, raise your right hand. Repeat after me. I swear, that next year, when I run for president, you will vote for me." We all swore. And that was my encounter with the soon-to-be president of the United States. He was very funny. A great sense of humor.
Unbelievable story. More than 40,000 interviews over 50 years in the game. Eleanor Roosevelt, when you were just starting in radio at, 23, 24 in Miami Beach?
Her son was mayor of Miami Beach, and he set up the interview for me, and there she was. And when I told Hillary, first time I interviewed Hillary, and I told Hillary Clinton that I interviewed Eleanor Roosevelt. She was sitting right under Eleanor Roosevelt's, the painting of Eleanor Roosevelt in the White House. I thought she would collapse. "You knew her? You touched her." "What was she like?" I said, "She was a tough lady."
Yeah.
And she was a tough lady.
Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, but you haven't yet gotten to Castro or Prince Charles. Anyone else you'd like to get on the show?
Well, I went down to Cuba last year, and we made some inroads. We met with some people in the Cuban Parliament, and hopefully we'd like to do Fidel or Raul. That's, one of our goals. I'd like to interview, Prince Charles, the staff would like to interview him. I mean, I'm fascinated with, royalty doesn't flip me.
No.
Because it's luck of the draw. So I'm not flipped by royalty. Who else would I like to interview? The president of France, he's kind of fascinating to me, and then to meet his wife wouldn't be a bad deal.
No.
What other? Geez, I'm old. I've interviewed.
No, you've done it all.
I've interviewed the demon. Oh, I'd love to do Osama bin Laden. He'd be the number one get. And, someone asked me, wouldn't you yell at him? The worst way to interview someone like that is to approach it hostily. The way you want to learn something is to come at them so that they have comfort with you. I didn't have an agenda. Probably the first question I would ask Osama bin Laden is, why did you leave the riches of one of the richest families in Saudi Arabia to live among rocks? You know, what prompt? Now, he would see in that question, hopefully, that I'm really interested in him, fascinated by someone who would give that up for a cause. You know, and then I come around to the other things, but that's a way to come around it. He would be at the top of the list. Of course, Fidel, I tell you who I'd like to interview, God, the real God. Here's what I ask him. Ready?
Yeah.
First, ladies and gentlemen, this Tuesday, God, right?
And the subline would be, what the hell?
And then, yeah. No, but then Tiger Woods calls and says, I'll do it Tuesday. We can't.
Yeah.
Bump God. Okay. You got Tiger? Tiger would be way up there.
Yeah.
But I've interviewed him a few times, so that wouldn't be a new get, just the current get. I would ask God, did you have a son? Because if he says no, the ethical world is in chaos. What if he says yes? Then we go from there.
Yeah.
What if he says, I had a daughter?
And her name is Oprah.
No, Madonna.
Oh, okay. All right.
He said, and where did you come from to get here, God? Salt Lake.
Joseph Smith is my father.
That's right. Oh, poor boy.
Oh. My list, I'm not shooting as high as God. I had James Taylor, Sting, Bono, Charles Manson, and you.
Well, I did all of them except Manson. Have no desire to do Manson. And now that you've got me, you got three left. And by the way, they're not hard, all three of them. James Taylor is a wonderful guy. One of the sweetest men I know. Sting is a very approachable. And Bono, if you just mention that you want to do anything with regard to AIDS and poverty and some of the causes that he's sincerely involved in, you're going to get him. And you know what you do? Here's what you do, Drew. You want to do something smart?
Yes, sir.
Larry King told me to call you.
Oh. Oh yeah. Can I say that?
Of course. That's called one jump to another. Use one to get another. You know, I'm giving you permission.
You are the last Carson, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe not from a comedic perspective, but because you are one of the last interviewers who doesn't have an agenda and simply treats the guest like a guest.
Yeah, thank you for that. I never regarded myself. A lot of these hosts now, they're interested in themselves talking. When you turn on my show, 9 out of 10 times the guest should be talking. If I'm talking, 8 out of 10 times that's not the show. That's about me. The show isn't about me. I'll be here tomorrow. The show's about the guest and what we can learn from the guest. But too much of these hosts now, they got their own gig, their own, not my ball of wax. I don't have to listen to a show to know what the host thinks. I don't care what the host thinks. I care what the guest thinks. On many of these shows, the guest is a prop.
Yeah.
I've never used a guest as a prop. You know, it's easy to do, but it's pompous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's say, Drew Marshall, and let's say you wrote a book. Drew Marshall's book called My Toronto. All right? That's your book.
Okay.
You're on my show. But I'm not Larry King. I'm pompous Joe Blow, right?
Yes.
Our guest today is Drew Marshall. Drew's written a book called My Toronto. I've been to Toronto many times. I love the city. I've been to many places. And I go to a lot of Blue Jay games. Drew, you write about you talk about the Blue Jays? Good. I hope so, because that's a nice stadium. See, now all you're hearing is me. And instead of being Drew's Toronto, it's Larry's Toronto.
I've never learned a thing when I was talking.
That's my number one maxim in life. And it's so true of anybody on any walk of life at any time. No one can say they learned anything when they were talking.
By the way, my book, I think, should be entitled, What Am I Doing Here?
I was going to do it. That was going to be the title of my remarkable journey. Why Am I Here? But they thought it was a little too light. We're doing a follow-up to My Remarkable Journey. There's going to be a whole bunch of funny stories. And the title of the book is... Having said that.
Brilliant. I like that.
Like that title.
Yeah. Mr. Zeiger, have you ever sent a residual check to King's Wholesale Liquors?
I should. You know the story. That's how I got my name. I was Larry Zeiger. It was my first day on the air, scared to death. General manager calls me in and says, what name are you going to use? I said, what do you mean, what name? Well, you can't use Zeiger. It's too ethnic. So you got to pick a name. I said, what? And he had the Miami Herald open, a full-page ad, King's Wholesale Liquors. He said, you're Larry King. I said, okay. I legally changed it a year later. Funny story about legally changing names. There's a judge in New York named Judge Peter Schmuck. You do not want to appear before him on a name change. That's a true story.
I can't recover from that. You and I had the same childhood experience in that we both used to mimic a certain Theater of the Mind show. Except when you were doing it at 5 years old, it was probably live. 5 years old, back in Brooklyn.
Yep, I would imitate radio shows.
Right, and it would be, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men.
Oh, I used to do them all. You want a few?
Yeah.
Okay, first, it's all I wanted to do was be in radio, but I'll give, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. The shadow knows. Then I'll give you another. This one I used to love. And now a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Then another one, show called Lights Out, Arch Obler, Sunday night, 10 o'clock. Crawl under your couch. Close your blinds. Lock your door. And turn your lights out.
I just
get scared to death before it began.
I just got shivers.
Lone Ranger rides again. Come with us now to those days of yesteryear in the West. See, I used to love that. Lone Ranger found out what Tonto meant by Kemosabe. They never spoke again. S of a B.
These are the jokes. They interrupted your show when they went into space.
The night we landed on the moon, Mel Brooks was my guest on radio. And he's the funniest man alive, right? So I said to him, you want to play the 2,000-year-old man? And he would go into it immediately. Okay, I'm 2,000 years. I says, okay, 2,000-year-old man, today we've landed on the moon. What do you think of that? And he immediately says, the moon is my favorite thing in the whole world. I love the moon. The moon, I worship the moon every day. Why? Is because for 400 years I thought I had a cataract. And a friend of mine, Bernie, said, isn't the moon beautiful tonight? I said, the what?
Oh, man. Folks, now you know what you're going to get at Falls View
Casino.
That's
what you're going to get. Chance has just arrived in the room. Quickly, Chance, just say hello to Drew. You're on the radio in Toronto.
Oh, this is good.
Hi,
Chance. How you doing?
And tell him that you like the Blue Jays.
I like the Blue Jays.
Oh, he's a liar.
But you are really a
Dodgers fan.
Yes.
You
bet.
Well said.
That's my 11-year-old all-star little league. And if you don't think so, he'll tell you.
What position?
Shortstop and pitcher.
Oh, he's the man.
He is. That's the man. That's what they call you, the man.
Fallsview Casino Resort, March 26, 27, 9 p.m.
March 26, 27. See you there.
Thank you, Larry
you
King.
You better come, Drew.
I will, sir. I will.
Thanks, babe.
Bye-bye. Larry King on the Drew Marshall Show. Doesn't get any better than that, ladies and gentlemen. Have a wee listen to his gorgeous wife, Sean King, singing here. She will also join him next week. Sean King singing in the background. Stay with us.
Like something that you read about.
You're someone I can't live without. I give this promise
to you now. Forever and ever I give my heart, my soul, this love.
I'll always love you.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.